This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts and anyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women. Wanted to see how you are, really. How's it going?
Since yesterday.
Since yesterday. For the benefit of the podcast listeners who think we only talk on this, we don't talk at other times.
I started my day, Hattie. I went to bed quite early last night just because, I don't know, I couldn't be bothered to turn the TV on. I don't know if you ever get that. I just couldn't be bothered. So I just went
Not very much, but yeah, go on.
And I woke up this morning quite early then, and I went downstairs and got straight on the internet to talk to who knows. And my mum had told me about a documentary she'd watched about Rose West's childhood. So I've started my day watching a Channel 5 documentary about Rose West.
But do you think you're, and I think you're the same as me, and other people think I'm weird. Oh, I'm going to sneeze.
There she goes. And again.
And I haven't got my bloody tenor lady on.
Big
mistake. I didn't put it on and I thought, I'm not going to put it on. There's not going to be any that much lulls today. No, but me and my sister, we like something a bit, it sounds always say depressing. And the thing is, I tell myself, and sometimes my friends take the mickey and they're like, oh, is it because, you know, you're looking at people that are worse off than you to make yourself feel better? And it's like, it's not that clear cut. We're just nosy, I think, and interested in the human nature is what
Well, I mean, this documentary on Channel 5, I've got to say, I've only watched 20 minutes of it, of a 90-minute documentary. I love it. Why do we watch horror films? We're the only animal who will purposely frighten themselves, you know. A dog won't jump off a building for kicks, you know, it will. So yeah, I think it's
we will jump out of buildings.
Well, not me. I'm not very good at well, post baby I can't jump anything. There's no jumping.
No, what, because of weeing or just fear?
Yeah, pelvic floors. Yeah, pelvic floors.
All right, I thought there might be.
I was telling Al the other day, actually, because he wanted to have a sort of a dance and stuff. He says, oh, copy me, and it was all a bit jumpy. I said, I can't jump, and I explained to him that he ripped some buckles on the way out, and so now I can't jump, otherwise wee comes out. He found it all very funny.
Did he? Hux has been asking lots of questions about the body. I don't know if it's a thing of the age or whatever, but yeah, lots of questions about where babies come from, and then, you know, where they literally, like, where they come out and everything. And so I told him, and then he said, I said, so mummies have got two holes. And he said, can I see them? Wow. It's blessing the way he said it. So, like, can I see them? Like, as if you're just showing, you know, your elbow. And it's like, fair enough in a way, isn't it? So
yeah. Well, why would they think it's, yeah.
But I didn't. Okay. Don't worry.
Yeah, all right.
I'm not one of those mums.
You're not Rose West.
Oh, no. I mean, I kind of want to ask, but I kind of don't want to ask.
Ask it yourself, mate.
I think you did have a good childhood then.
Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, really? I mean, understatement. I know nothing.
I've never had anything like it.
Oh, okay. I think it's coming back to me now, things that I've heard.
Yeah, so, well, anyway, I'm going to have a look. It's on Channel 5. But did you draw a diagram?
No, I do what all good mums do. We go on YouTube, and if you put in, like, literally you can put in telling a kid about where a baby comes from. There's, like, loads of good videos. Not, not anything dodgy.
Yeah, yeah.
A nice video.
We talked about it the other day, didn't we? So I said, I'd just say, oh, I don't know. I'm not ready to talk to him. But...
Yeah, you just give them as much as they want to take, really. Right. We better get ready for Rachel.
Rach.
For having some career and life guidance. Are you ready for this?
Yes. Can I make tea?
Yeah, actually, I think I might make tea. Let's do it. Here we go. Hello, welcome to the Funny Mummies. I'm Hattie Ashdown. How are you doing out there? Today we have something a little bit different for our Funny Mummies. We have an actual expert, not just us nattering on about nonsense and winging our way through this life and parenting lark. We thought after the year we've had, and I don't know about you, but I'm like a moth to a lamp. Is that the right saying? I don't know. To anyone who feels like they're going to just hold me and guide me, if only mentally, after a long time of no shoulders to lean on or cry on. I mean, physically, of course, I'm sure you have lots of good friends you see or talk to on the phone. Though I think COVID has shone a light on people you can really depend on. That might be another topic, especially those that don't like Zoom. Anyway, so we thought there may be a lot of mums out there not wanting to go back to their job after COVID or want a career change, but don't know where to start. And I think we're hearing a lot about confidence. It's a bit of a low after being locked away and burnt out by homeschooling, maybe. So we have a career rework coach, I'm going to call her. She might correct me. Before we intro, please welcome back, of course. She wasn't here on the last episode, which was for International Women's Day, because I think, quite frankly, she's had enough of celebrating women. She didn't want to be on that. It's Gemma Beagley, of course. Hi, Gemma.
Hi, I'm absolutely not interested in women, whether internationally or domestically. I'm not interested.
Didn't she just say, I don't want to do that episode? I've had enough celebrating women. Move on. So now she's a journalist, BBC News presenter, and now a career coach for mums, is a mum of two teenage daughters and is the wife of Jeremy Vine, which I'm sure will come up at some point maybe. Please welcome Rachel Schofield.
This is like the Steve Wright show where we all clap me. There's only three of us.
Yay. I'm old school radio, Rachel. I started off in BBC London and all that. So I'm still like, yeah, we all clap in the studio, even though we haven't got anyone in the studio to clap. Falls on deaf ears sometimes. But anyway, hello, welcome. Thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure. I'm trying to, like, I liked your moth to the lamp analogy. I'm sort of trying to get my inner glow going for you so I can, No pleasure when you said I can sort everybody out. You know, might take a bit more than half an hour.
You're only our second expert. I think the first or second ever episode I had, she was like a therapist and we talked about tantrums and things. And we haven't had one since then, but only because it just hasn't come up. And you've come up. So here we go. Are you up for a quick fire round? Just so we can know you in a very sort of fickle, very quick way.
And can the answer to everything be Jammy Dodgers?
Yes.
We'll see.
Okay. Number one, what or who has been your lockdown saviour, apart from Jammy Dodgers?
Jammy Dodgers have been quite up there. It is food for me, I think. Actually, it's not sweet thing, it's crisps. I have had a bit of a problem with crisps, particularly late at night. Even when I've had a big meal, I've got in the habit of snacking at about like 10:30, 11 before I go to bed. Like, this weird combo of a bit of Horlicks, like old lady drink, and then I go looking for nibbly things, sweet and not sweet, salty, spicy, salt and vinegar crisps. That's been powering me through on Ovaltine and salt and vinegar crisps.
I'm a sweet person, really. I found out, I always deny that I am, but I realise I am sweet. What was the last thing that you sang? Well, I guess I should say, do you sing? Do you sing out loud to yourself?
Yes, actually. Oh, yeah, to myself. Not, I wouldn't subject anybody else to that. I do have, so my kind of power ballad, I like to hear Rhinestone Cowboy, Glen Campbell. What even is that? It's like, doing the washing up and it's like, and it's like, I'm getting my groove on and, I don't know why I want to be a rhinestone cowboy, but there's something in there that's all about like jazz hands. And, oh, look, my builders have started next door. Can you hear that?
A little bit, that's fine.
It's atmospheric. Okay, last one then. I think it's got to be a standard question. What's your favourite way to cook a potato?
Yeah, I was listening last week and it opened my mind to a hot, when you first say the word potato, I get like, what do I get? I get like chip, smash, jacket potato.
Yeah.
I thought, hang on a minute. When someone started talking about, the high-end potato, I thought there's a whole untapped world of potatoes out there. Like,
yeah.
I remember we used to get hash browns at school. And what are those little croquette potatoes?
Oh, croquette.
Oh,
Do you like? Yeah. Would you go a croquette? I don't know.
Not it's for like, a long time.
Yeah, crunchy on the outside, soft in the middle. I might have to go dauphinoise. I know I'm copying like your guest last week, but Jeremy makes a mean potato dauphinoise.
Oh, does he? I bet he does.
And I could not be bothered. But he's got this like thing that takes half your finger off.
A mandolin.
You can do it. A mandolin? Yes, well, that you kind of go along and you make all your little skinny slices. Ooh. So if I'm not making them, then that. Otherwise, it's just chips. Chips all the time.
Absolutely.
Do you make homemade chips then?
Yeah, do I? Does anybody?
Okay, so where shall we start on career? Gemma, do you want to go first and talk about where you are? And I think that, you know, the listeners will hopefully sort of find something from our own situations. Mm. Obviously, Rachel, I'm fascinated how you come to doing something like this because, you know, have you always been quite an organised person? Because I feel like, obviously, it needs someone to be an organised person.
Yeah, I think it's not so much about being organised. I think it's about being nosy, actually. I guess I was thinking what's quite interesting. This is interesting for all people who are thinking about career change, because I've sort of made this slight pivot from working as a journalist and then, which I still do some, you know, some presenting and things, but, you know, shifting over to the coaching. There's actually, when I look at it, there's sort of strands that come through all of that. So I think just being really interested in people, mm-hmm. and loving asking questions and kind of digging around, whether that's for a story or whether that's sort of in somebody's personal story of like, where is my life going? Mm-hmm. And there are skills there around listening, properly listening.
Yes.
Not kind of listening so that you kind of think, what am I going to say next? How do I have the same story but better? And, you know, actually really kind of hearing what someone's trying to say. So I think it was more about those kind of skills, about analysing and looking for the truth in kind of the muddle that has taken me from journalism into coaching.
So would you be that friend then when people are at a wedding or something and it's a reception and they come and have a chat to you? I don't know why I'm visualising a wedding, but, you know, and they come and chat and you say to them, are you all right? And they go, no, I'm just really fed up with my life at the moment, Rachel. And was you finding you're that person that was sort of,
yeah, I
plan for them.
I hope so. I think probably because maybe it's something to do with the journalism training, actually, is I'm not somebody who has strong opinions. I don't know if that's a really kind of lame thing to say, because in the light of kind of the Piers Morgans of this world who are kind of out there and putting it, but perhaps because I'm sort of BBC through my core, that's all to do with the fact that I sort of hang back and I'm looking for both sides of the story. So I'm not hopefully that quick to jump in with the kind of, well, if I were you, I would do this. Or,
but it's helping them come to the conclusion, isn't it? Like a good therapist does, I guess. Yeah.
And coaching is very much on that same premise. It isn't setting yourself up as some kind of guru who has all the answers. You can go, right, having listened to that, this is precisely what you need to do. It's really not that at all. It's just kind of making the space for someone to start unpicking what's going on and trying to work out where they want to be. And then you spend some time looking at where they are and you're there to try and help them work out how to bridge the gap, really. But by asking difficult questions and by kind of getting a little bit challenging sometimes and going, okay, when you say that, what do you mean by that? And what evidence do you have for that belief that you've got about yourself? And it's fascinating.
Can I jump in there? Because you talk about that, this is what I want to be or where I want to be. But I think that I'm halfway through my working career. You know, I've been working for 20, coming up 23 years. I reckon I've probably got another 23 years. And I want to change. I don't want to carry on this path that I'm on. I'm in finance, which I consider very boring. Anyway, but I don't know what. I don't know what I want to do and where I want to be. You know, I guess I feel that if I knew, then it's like, okay, right, I know. So now what do I need to do to become a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker, you know? So I'd be interested in you sharing your experience of how people can work out what it is or the sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant question. And I think that's so typical, actually. It's like I was posting on my Instagram feed the other day and I put up a picture of someone, kind of just a little graphic I'd done of someone lying in bed kind of going, yeah, I would follow my dreams if I knew what the hell they were. It is, it's that kind of, like, I know I don't want this, but like, what do I want? And so actually that's sort of where I would normally start when I'm working with people one-to-one, is you don't dive straight into, right, what do you want to do? Let's make it happen. Because often they're totally like going around in circles. They've got several ideas or they've got no ideas. So actually, before you start, we tend to spend quite a lot of time on sort of re-examining who you are and what's important to you. So I would kind of take time with people looking at their strengths, what they're really good at, what they like doing, because the weird thing is sometimes you've got sort of strengths and skills, but you've ended up doing something that doesn't really speak to you. So you might have been really good at maths at school and you've ended up as an accountant and you're thinking, but I'm good at maths, so why don't I like being an accountant? Yes, and you're nodding, Gemma.
That's the thing that you drive when you're young, when you're at school. It's like, what are you good at? Okay, go and do that. No one, well, in our day, I feel like, said, what do you like doing? It was like, what are you good at?
Yeah, and there's a combination. There's definitely a place for what are you good at and what comes to you naturally, because often that is where you're going to thrive. Mm. But it's the fact that the picture's much wider than that. And one of the other things that's really interesting for people to explore, and you can kind of Google this stuff and find ways to go and look at it for yourself if you don't want to work with a coach, but is also you start looking at sort of skills and strengths, but also looking at your values. And I think that's often where the disconnect comes, when you realise you're doing something that doesn't really call to you anymore. So I always think quite a good example is when I was at school, like, you know, picking up on your career coach kind of sessions when you're in the lower sixth, you know, yeah. I remember filling in a thing of like, what are you like? And because I'm quite organized and I'm sort of quite analytical and I like sorting stuff, it said I should be a librarian was one of the options. And I'm thinking, yeah, in theory, that works, doesn't it? Because I've ticked a certain number of boxes, just like you, Gemma, with your maths equals accountant.
Yeah.
But it kind of has overlooked a whole part of you, which I look at with clients, which is kind of around your values and something much deeper about what's important to you and where you find fulfillment and happiness and where you're kind of in flow. So for me, having done work on my values, there'd be stuff around performance and practicality and communication. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of performance and communication goes on in the library because it's a bit quiet, you know, and that's a really simple example. But kind of going digging for the deeper stuff of what do you need? You know, are you someone who's actually driven by adventure and freedom? Are they some of your, in which case maybe being an accountant's not going to hit it? Or, you know, if you sort of think, well, I was great at art at school, so why I've ended up as a graphic designer, but somehow I don't love it.
Mm.
Now, is that because actually you need to use your creativity in a very different way? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's something that doesn't kind of work for you, there's an element of your job that works, but one bit that's not being kind of fed.
Right.
And you just don't get kind of hitting the spot. So a lot of work, basically, I think, before you kind of dive into the what, it's like the who. It's like, who am I now and what matters to me? And that actually can take quite a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah, there is something that in my work that is not fulfilled, which for me is, you know, is the creativity, right? It's the idea of creating something. Laughter is very important to me. It is a core value. It really is, you know, no laughter, no joy as far as I'm concerned. And so actually, if I'm at work and I could be cracking through a spreadsheet, find that I can do standing on my head, I am in flow. If actually I've got this, you know, I can be creative with a spreadsheet. And that's okay, but there's other times where actually I could be sitting in an auditorium watching a play, but I'm not finding it particularly creative, and therefore I'm not in flow, even though I seem to be in this artistic environment. So that values thing, I think, it feels like it's something that everyone should do anyway.
Mm.
Anyway.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really interesting what you were saying, that there are elements of your work that kind of tick that box. And I think sometimes, you know, some people end up making a big career change, but sometimes it's almost, you can still stick with some of your real core skills. You don't have to go and sort of throw everything out, baby with the bathwater, and go and say, I need to, you know, run a bar on the beach in Mexico. It's actually that by just tapping into some of the stuff that you're underusing and maximizing the things that you really enjoy, you know, are there changes you can make in the work that you're already doing that actually would make enough of a shift?
Mm.
You know, are there conversations you could have at work with your boss and say, I'd love to do more of this? Because I think sometimes we don't, as well as women, I don't want to generalize, but we don't always speak up about what we'd like to be doing or put ourselves forward. But sometimes in order to make the change, I get into that slightly uncomfortable space.
I mean, I've never worked in a real job, Rachel, that probably won't surprise you. But I hear from my husband and my friends, and sometimes I'm like, and I know they're not happy, and I'm like, why don't you just suggest this? And it's such a confidence thing.
Mm.
And you know by who we came together, Viv Goscott covers a lot of this in her How to Own the Room. There's a lot of stuff about talking to employees and sort of having that conversation. So I recommend that people listen to that if you want to know more about that area. But for someone like me, well, I say I've got the confidence. The trouble is I probably used to have too much confidence that if I was on reception, I was like, I know, why don't I do this on reception? And like, I think we're going to let you go.
That's really interesting. So, but I think that's brilliant. I'd love to have, if I ran a big organisation, I think people with initiative and ideas is great. So what, why were they knocking you back on that?
Oh, don't. They just, I don't know. I think I used to be, I probably was an annoying cocky, to be honest. I look back and cringe. Because I went around completely different to how I am now, which we can get onto, which I think something happens when you have kids, the imposter syndrome voice comes in. Because I look back at how confident and cocky I was in different jobs and probably like, because they were just always like part-time. I mean, I'm not doing it forever. I'm going to be a star, you know, whatever, or I'm going to be successful, whatever that means in TV or radio or whatever. So, yeah, and then I did have some successes, and I think that's another good topic, isn't it? When you've had successes and then you go right back and then you find yourself like, I don't know, maybe doing like quite a rubbish job, but this is the whole world of being self-employed. So I'm going off on a tangent. But I think that people might relate to the whole, I mean, I don't even think it's, I think it must be a hormonal thing as well. Having children, it's been a shock to me how it, the sort of confidence thing has knocked my confidence. And I don't know if it's just literally a hormonal thing, or just that time away and more time at home, not hanging out with grown-ups. And I'm getting better, but I, at the beginning of the year, I really had a light bulb moment of real. I didn't realize it was happening to me, that I realized I would do things and go, but you know, you're not good enough for that, and everyone thinks you're crap, really. And I was like, wow, I didn't even realise that voice was just there.
And so that inner voice that we all have is kind of, it's, you know, everybody has it, and, you know, in whatever form it comes, some people almost literally hear it, other people it's just a sort of feeling in their stomach or a little sort of person on their shoulder. But I think realizing that you have to try and challenge that voice is so important. There's really interesting stuff out there about negativity bias, if you go look it up, and the scientists kind of look at this, the fact that there's a kind of evolutionary blip that we've all got, which is that back in the day when we were on the kind of plains of the savannah, we needed, our brains needed to front load all the danger and the risk and the possible what if, and look out for this and that could probably go wrong, and all the negative stuff to keep us safe. And then life has evolved and we don't have saber-toothed tigers and woolly mammoths, but our brain is still tending to hit us before anything else with the kind of danger, don't do this, that's risky, people will think you look like an idiot, who are you to try that?
Social media is the new saber-toothed tiger, I think.
I think you're right, Gemma. I think you can, you know, we see all the fact we're going to feel quite exposed, and it scares us and stops us taking risks. But it, you know, recognizing that and pushing back against it are two different things. It is hard, but I think almost kind of getting familiar with your inner voice and kind of noticing when it speaks to you is important, and sort of getting interested and thinking, okay, yeah, that was an interesting thought, but is it really a fact? I think we tend to think that our brain is sort of part of us and must just give us facts, and we go, oh, right, yeah. But of course, it's offering us a thought. Maybe it's offering us an assumption, a belief, but not a fact. And we need, it's our job to kind of think, right, I'm going to test that out. I mean, a really good example, I think, happens to a lot of women after their kids, if they've taken a career break, I hear this a lot, is people saying, I'd love to do that, but I'm too old. Now, I'm too old, I always suggest, is not a fact. The fact, you kind of need to you need to pick it apart. So the fact is, I am 45, say, in my case. That's the fact. But what I've done there is I've layered on an assumption about what that means and what the impact of that is. And I've come up with the expression, I'm too old. But it's like, well, says who? And where's the evidence? The only fact there is I'm 45. Whether I'm too old or not is an assumption I'm making that I need to kind of go out and test. So those kind of things are really interesting to play around with.
I hear that a lot from friends. I've said it myself. And Gemma, I think you said it a little while ago when you were thinking about, you know, that you want to sort of, you were like, oh, am I just too old though? Or did you say that, or am I just putting that?
No, I didn't. And I was going to ask about age actually, Rachel. That I'm interested. Hattie saying that perhaps she smoked when she was in her 20s, and that actually, can you have these conversations with let's keep it to women, but women in their 20s, because it feels like that it doesn't become a confidence problem until later on in a woman's life. And I was just, what I was thinking was that 40-year-old woman compared to a 40-year-old man, we've both got 40 years life experience, and perhaps that for women, that age thing means we're less confident, even though we've got the same experience as a man who's just like, I've got 40 years life experience and I'm going to have 41 years next year. Whereas I'm like, oh God, the clock's ticking and I'm just going to become this sort of, this old witch that's just going to flake away and be like the old witch, wicked witch of the West and just...
Yeah, and I think you make a really good point there, and I think without wanting to get too heavy, but I think a lot of that is around motherhood, isn't it? It's because most women at that point, if they're having those wobbles, it's because they've either taken time out or they've had to step back in some way quite often, or even if they're still working full time, they know that their brain is splitting in different directions.
Yes.
And I think that's such a challenge that people think that somehow that makes them less. They think those years out don't count.
Yes.
You know, they sort of feel like they've stood still, which in society's terms, in kind of pure work terms, they sort of have. But actually, I think one of the things we need to start doing as a society, and I don't know what the answer is, but is recognizing that, you know, that time as a mum is not kind of dead time or lost time or kind of time off. Mm. Where I think people often feel that they've sort of, their skills have diminished. They haven't just kind of stood still, they've diminished, as if all of those years, each year they kind of lose something.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is, but I think until we start as a society kind of realizing that, I was going to say motherhood, but it should be parenting really, shouldn't it? It shouldn't just be mum, but that parenting is a really hard job. I mean, God, we've seen it through COVID, and the skill set and the strengths and the kind of, perseverance and resilience, all those things that you need, you know, shouldn't be sniffed at as if like, oh, you've not been in the office for 3 years, so clearly you're now a blathering idiot. It's like, I don't think so.
Well, from people I've talked to, that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. I think things are getting better in that way, in the whole thing of like, if you want something doing, give it to a busy person. And I think that applies with women, and also the whole stereotype, which we talked about in a little bit in the International Women's Day episode, was that, oh, you know, well, you don't want to employ a woman because she's got kids, she might have to go off and go to a dentist appointment or whatever. But the truth of it is, we know that attitude hopefully is getting better, because actually women are not going to mess about. If you want to do their job, they want to get home. There's no like, oh, I could wander around the office, talk to a few guys, because it's going to get the job and get done. We know how to use our time well, supposedly, anyway.
Yeah.
The baby's quick.
Yeah, you're so right. You kind of become super efficient. You can juggle like six things at once and still not drop a ball. But I think as well, we don't always, and this ties in with confidence, it's a massive topic, but we don't always help ourselves, do we? Because we sort of share those worries in places where it's not helping us. To do the kind of, to be the apologetic, oh, sorry, would it be okay if I could just leave a little bit early? As if we sort of need permission for all these things, or as if that makes us less. Or we do that kind of, people who've been out of work tend to do a lot of the sort of, oh, I've just been at home for the last sort of 5 years. Or at the moment, yes. I'm only a mum. You know, it's like, excuse me?
That's the only way, yes.
Yeah, so all those kind of ways that we express ourselves, and like I quite often say to my clients, because people tend to say things like, this is women who've been out of the workplace, they'll say, I used to be a marketing executive or something, and I'm like, what do we mean by that? I mean, I know literally what people mean, because they're not currently working, but It's like, I used to be a lawyer. Are you not still a lawyer? Did you not get a really great qualification and degree and do a load of work?
If you're a doctor, you'd say I'm a trained doctor. You might be doctoring. Yeah. Do you see what it's I mean?
It's like not every, okay, there may be skills that you need to kind of update, but the core of you is still a lawyer or a doctor or a nurse or, an accountant or whatever. And it's just, I think, making yourself feel less. It's like, what about saying, I used to be a lawyer. It's like, my background is in law or,
Yes.
So there's just other ways of expressing it.
It's confidence just keeps coming up. And I guess that must be the that's why people were coming to you at the end of the day.
I think often it's because people get stuck for various reasons. I think from practical point of view, like Gemma was saying, of like, I sort of know I want to do something, but I don't really know how. So let's unpick that. And I think alongside it, people don't tend to come just for confidence. But I think you realize as soon as you start talking to people that there's so much often going on in the kind of mindset around it all. And the thing I always try and encourage people, and again, easier said than done, but this sort of thing we have around confidence, that we've got it totally ass about face. So we kind of say, well, I need to get more confident because then I can sort of start my own business. Or, well, I'll think about applying for some jobs when I'm more confident. As if like we'll sit around waiting for the confidence bus to come by and give us a delivery, and then we'll sort of get into action. And I think, okay, there are things you can definitely be doing to work on your confidence, particularly around mindset. But actually, the almost like the most challenging thing, but also really important thing, is to realize that confidence follows action and not the other way around. You don't kind of wait to get into action until you're confident. You have to find ways, and I'm not saying it's easy, but it's like taking the actions, however little, and getting slightly out of your comfort zone and trying to make a step forward. You suddenly go, oh, the world didn't fall in. That presentation I gave people didn't go, that was a pile of rubbish. You never darken our boardroom door again. People go, yeah, that was pretty good. Or they say, this was good, go away, work on that. And you suddenly think, okay, I'm moving forwards. I need some action.
Yes,
and
action,
then
I guess as well, someone used to say to me, you can't wait to feel good to do something right. And I don't know anybody that hasn't at some point suffered with depression, but it's just that thing, sure, I can lie in bed, but it's actually, I can't lie here waiting to not feel depressed to then, I'll wait until I'm not depressed, then I'll have a shower. But I'm talking about, quite simple, have a shower, even though despite feeling like that. And then it is that kind of mind shift of, oh, I'm doing it. I'm having a shower. I'm getting dressed. I've gone to the shops,
We've got about 5 minutes to try and talk about wonderful Claire, who has messaged me with her question for you, which is all still very connected, really. She said, I've worked part-time while my children are small in a job that's now de-skilled me. How can I rediscover my strengths and gently build up my confidence to go for something more satisfying? And then she said, you can say that I currently work in marketing and want to get back into communications role, which would allow me to write again and work more creatively. So a little bit similar to Gemma. I know Claire, and I think that a big confidence thing is in there as well.
Yeah. Do you know, that's really good. And thank you, Claire, if you're listening. I think that's quite a common situation. So I think there's quite a lot of sort of unpicking there to do. I think we kind of, and obviously Claire's done this because she's just trying to ask a simple question, but she's used the word de-skilled.
I know.
And I think, one of the things you really need to bring to any of this process is kind of curiosity. It's what I bring as a coach, but I think it's your best friend. So when you use a word like de-skilled, let's get curious about what you mean. Like, she needs to get specific about where she thinks the potential skills gaps are. And if she's sure, because sometimes, again, tied up with confidence, you feel you've been de-skilled because you're not using certain skills, but are they gone? Or is it just that you haven't been in a position to exercise them and kind of flex them? So I would encourage her to kind of find out where she thinks the gaps might be. And she talked about strengths. Again, there's some really interesting things you can do about your strengths, just for free. So one of the things I often say to my clients, and this is, initially a very kind of open beginner kind of level that you can do on your own, is go online and go on to truity.com or there's one called 16personalities.com, and you can do a free personality profile, a kind of strength profile. If you want like the full shebang, they end up asking you to pay, but they give you a quite interesting introductory kind of version of a Myers-Briggs type strengths profile. And even that just throws things up for you and says, you know, from what you've answered, you're coming out this way and that way, and these are some of your strengths. And even the act of being asked the questions, the kind of, in this scenario, yeah, would you intend to do this or that? It's quite thought-provoking. Yeah. And you don't have this, these kind of profiles aren't to then put you in a box and make you go, right, this is now me. But even to kind of go, okay, don't agree with that bit or do agree with that bit. So that's a good way to start exploring your strengths. I think if you're unsure again about, if you're really starting for sort of from scratch, if you've been out of work for quite a long time, if you Google the word job keywords, if you just Google list of job keywords, and you always get those kind of things like communication, leadership, creativity, teamwork, the sort of bullet points that come up time and time again on application forms. And you almost need to sit down with a kind of set of columns. I sometimes say to people, right, get yourself a set of columns, work, family, community, so sort of volunteering or school PTFA or working at your local church or whatever, and hobbies, if you've got time for any hobbies, and start to kind of think, okay, where can I find evidence of some of those keywords in those areas of my life? Even if I'm not working at the moment, let me take myself back to when I used to work. You know, what are the things that people tell me I'm good at? Even just friends, not necessarily professionally, but what comes up for me? What example could I find of really good teamwork? Nice. And start to think about where your strengths lie. I mean, it's a big exercise. I could talk about it for 10 minutes. But strength is important. And with that, sort of getting more familiar and reminding yourself of your strengths in a specific way and not allowing yourself to go, oh, but that was 10 years ago. Trying to think, okay, I'm going to own that strength. But by doing that, that also helps build your confidence, I think, because you start to kind of rebuild your brand a little bit of like, who am I?
Yeah.
What is brand? What's my kind of USP? Where are my super strengths? What am I really good at? And what do I really enjoy doing? So it's almost like I did this the other day with a group that I was working with, a group of returners on a kind of formal program. So it sounds a bit businessy, but actually, if you've ever done a SWOT analysis, businesses often do them for themselves. This is a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats analysis. And people sit and do it like in big teams for their business. Like, where are our strengths and weaknesses? Where are the opportunities and where are the threats from the other companies? But actually, you can do your own SWOT analysis and again, there's lots of questions that I would ask a client, but building up a picture of your strengths with a view to thinking, how do I kind of maximize those and really play to them? And on that weaknesses thing, going back to Claire's question about she's kind of de-skilled. So where exactly does she feel the potential weaknesses are? And looking at your weaknesses, not as a way to kind of smack yourself on the head and go, oh, I'm rubbish at that. Yeah. And that makes me feel bad. But actually to be specific about what you think are areas where there might be gaps, because that's going to help you work out what you need to do about it. Until you kind of own the weaknesses, think, you know, what do I need to do? Do I need to go and do some additional training?
Yeah.
Can I find that for free? But also thinking kind of more creatively, like who do I know who could help me with that? What are the conversations I could have that would give me more knowledge about the industry, which is where I feel I'm a bit sort of at sea. So things like that.
I think going back to the when I read the de-skilled word, it's like we were saying earlier, it seems so harsh because you're like, you know, like we were saying earlier about the whole, I've only been doing this, and I know what she's been doing, and it's, you know, it's copyright, and it's actually working to a time limit a lot of the time, and it's I think it's not as creative as she'd like to, but you know, it's I don't think it's de-skilling, but I'm not.
And it's, and it, you know, she it is, it's trying to sort fact from fiction again.
If you're feeling crap about where you are, it's like, this has ruined my life. I think it can feel a bit like.
Yeah.
She put also, I think my biggest thing is I'm just not sure my strength anymore because I've lost so much confidence. I'm not thick skinned enough to just throw myself in and see what happens. So I need ways of building confidence gently. Oh, bless.
Yeah, and it's hard. And I think, again, another thing I would say, it's easy for me to say in 2 minutes, and this is not the work of 2 minutes, but when you say, we have a habit of kind of going, I've lost my confidence. And I would just encourage people to get interested in what they mean by that, because, you know, what does confidence really mean? It means kind of different things to different people. And it's not a sort of fixed thing either, is it? We know that confidence kind of comes and goes, and some people seem to have more of it than others. So it's quite tempting to kind of be, I've lost my confidence. But I would tend to suggest that's not the whole story. There'll still be bits of your life where you are, you know, confidence is a funny thing. You can be like well confident in one area of your life. You're like, you know, organizing all the family parties, yep, and you're doing all the speeches. And then suddenly someone says, can you give a presentation to three people in this meeting? You're like, oh my gosh, that would just like the, my idea of a nightmare. So, you know, what's happening there when you say you're not confident? You're going to bank the places where you are confident, and then think, where I don't feel confident, what's going on for me there? Is it something about public speaking? Is it something about being with people I don't know? Does it tend to come up when I feel I'm put on the spot and I'm not prepared? Is it because I haven't nailed down my strengths and I'm not very good at kind of promoting myself? So you almost need to think in terms of confidence being, you need to find yourself some little goals around that. If the confidence problem is around public speaking, it's like, okay, what, you feel like you're at a 5 out of 10 on confidence. Don't ask, how do I get to 10? Because that's just, you know, you don't need to go and give a TED talk. That would sort of blow your head off. But like, how do you get to 5.5 or 6? You know, what could you challenge yourself to do that's manageable, maybe a bit scary, but that will move you on a little bit? Because so it's sort of thinking, where exactly are you lacking confidence? And what would make a difference? Where are you trying to get to? And how do you then sort of move forward in those particular areas rather than thinking, oh, I'm not confident? It's like, yeah, but what does that mean for you?
That's so true. There's, you know, believe it or not, there's areas I'm not confident in, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's really interesting you say that, Hattie, because I think confidence is such a funny thing, because there's a kind of physicality to confidence as well that kind of can belie what's going on inside. I like the sound of my own voice, you can tell, and I'm a TV presenter by background, but that doesn't mean I'm confident all the time. You know, I've had to give some presentations recently where the heart kind of starts going and you get the little sweaty palms and you're thinking, why did I say I'd do this? You know, everybody gets nervous or has wobbles, or one day you're like, yeah, I'm so good at this. And the next day you're like, this is going to be awful.
Well, I think we also get into, and this is a whole nother conversation, and I'm going to wrap this up now. But my husband's been studying a lot of stoicism stuff. And I think it's also try and rewrite your story. So we get into a fixed thing of going, oh, I'm not a very confident person. I can't do that. Or, you know, like, off the top of my head, I'm thinking one of my sisters always sort of said, oh, well, I don't really do hosting. I'm not very good at it. And like, actually, I think it's just, if you can get, if we can just go, actually, that doesn't have to be your story. And like, I had a filming thing the other week and I'm terrible at learning lines. Again, my husband went, you've just decided that's your thing, that you're not good at learning lines. And I was like, oh, he's so right. I've just got fixed in that. And so then I had to try to do some affirmations that, like, I am great at
that. So right. It's this thing of like when people go, oh, I'm not creative. And you're like, okay, again, let's look for the evidence for that. You know, you sort of go, that's because Mrs. Taylor said that to me when I was 9 at, you know, primary school. It's a bit of rubbish. You know, and you've sort of embedded that, and it becomes, like you say, a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? And, you know, so just change, you know, rather than like, I'm not creative, even just saying, you know, I'm not as creative as I'd like to be yet. That then takes you into action. Like when you say I'm crap at learning lines, you're like, you know, I find it challenging to learn lines. So I'm doing this, you know. So make it into some action or goal rather than just like, my narrative is I'm rubbish.
It's a lot of generalising. So we could go on for hours, couldn't we? But it's a lot of it's generalising, like that creative thing. Now, put a pencil in my hand or a paintbrush, forget it. But that doesn't mean I'm not creative. But, you know, I could spin a yarn or, you know, kind of tell a joke, whatever. And so it's a different kind of creativity. And so, and confidence, like, so it's just this kind of general blanket, I'm not confident.
Yeah.
could you make me a cup of tea? Well, yeah, of course I could. Right, so you're confident making me a cup of tea, exactly. Like, you know.
Yeah, could you drive me to Scotland just with a paper map? Yeah, no problem. You know, certain yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's almost like you need to take the word and kind of redefine it. Creativity is a brilliant one because people have sort of come to think of that as like, can I paint like Picasso? No.
Pottery. I'm not pottery.
Yeah, or I can't do a lovely paper cutting, you know, magnificent creation. But actually, I can think really creatively. I'm brilliant at generating. So kind of take a word and think, I'm going to kind of commandeer this. Yeah. On my own terms a little bit.
Rachel, this has been bloody brilliant. we could go on and on, but if people want to speak to you more, where would they find you?
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah, so I am, my website is www.rachelschofield.co.uk. Important to get the co.uk. I think, weirdly, there's another Rachel Schofield out in Australia who's some sort of brilliant parenting coach. Oh. So if you hit a page which is all about how to parent, that's, you know, I wouldn't claim to be any expert.
This Rachel is rubbish at parenting.
I know nothing. But otherwise I'm on Instagram at Rework Your Life. And I'm on Facebook as well, Rachel Schofield Coaching. But yeah, Rework Your Life on Insta and you'll find me on Tinternet.
Brilliant.
As well.
And it's a brilliant Instagram page. You've got it all nice and neat and tidy. I wish mine was. Thank you. And thank you, Gemma, as always. Keep listening and downloading and sharing. We're getting a lot of stuff about, you know, just tell people, like, if you can share it, like, on your stories rather than, you know, obviously the comments and that are great, but if anyone can share and listen to this, that'd be so helpful, because we're so nearly there. We've got a target, Rachel. We've got to get with our episodes so we can start making a bit of money. But the money's not for us. The money is for you. We want to be able to pay guests. We want to be able to cover their childcare. We have all these dreams that we want to be strong women that can, you know, make things successful. Anyway, right. Goodbye and thank you so much. Look after yourselves out there. Bye. You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with The Other Woman Show with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to Gemma Beagley and our guest today. Please see the write-up in this episode to find out how you can follow us and our guest online. This show is edited by Alex Holland, recorded via Zoom. The show also goes out on Thursdays on Soho Radio as part of The Other Woman Collective, where often you can hear the full music version of the show. If you'd like to support us and get lots of goodies, like a video version where you can see our mugs, go to Funny Mummies on Patreon, where you can buy us a coffee or maybe an hour's childcare. Thanks very much for listening. Keep subscribing and telling your friends. It really, really does help. We'll see you next time for a dose of Mum and Tonic.